We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. This podcast is a recording of a live show we did at the Stand Comedy Club on Monday, the 29th of May. And was joined on stage by friends of True Faith and all-around good guys and excellent football journalists, Craig Hope, Keith Downey, Mark Douglas, Luke Edwards and George Culkin. And we've had a chat about the season just gone. Couple of things to say, and three things to say, in fact. Number one, at the end of this recording, delighted to be joined by Darren Eales, CEO at Newcastle United, and Peter Silverstone, COO at Newcastle United, to talk about the season, their roles. They very kindly took a couple of questions as well from me. Incredible that people at Newcastle United are engaging at these kind of events. Really, really grateful to the guys for coming down and talking to us. Absolute pleasure to have them at a True Faith event. There is a slight worrying on this recording. I'm sorry about that. We're relying on the venue to record for us at these things. I still think it's okay and listenable, but you know, you have my apologies in advance for that. And finally, part two of this show is on our Patreon platform now. It's a Q&A with the audience. Some really interesting questions and answers, as always. So if you want to support this podcast, come and join us on Patreon. It's just £8 a month, and part two of this is already waiting for you on there after you finish listening to this one. So thanks everyone for being a True Faith listener. Really, really happy with the event last night. This is a great time to be a Newcastle United fan, and I hope that came across in the recording. I'll leave you now with Charlotte introducing us. Thanks very much for listening.
Musical chairs to start the night. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Fourth in the league. What a season. Thank you so much for coming down on your bank holiday Monday to celebrate with us. We have a fantastic run of guests tonight to talk you through this season and beyond. We've got Alex Hurst from True Faith. Craig Hope from the Daily Mail. Keith Downey from Sky Sports. Mark Douglas from the iPaper. George Culkin from The Athletic. And Luke Edwards from The Daily Telegraph and the BBC.
Can I swap seats?
Pardon?
Can I swap seats?
No. Do you just want to go home?
I might get hit by the...
Luke, you might need Amanda's tub palace dormant tonight, I think.
A little bit of housekeeping before we start. Please do make sure that your phones are off. We are being filmed this evening. No filming yourselves. Thank you very much. No photographs, no flash photography. I don't think you get signal down here anyway, so that works for us. No smashing glasses. We were so close last time, but somebody did it right at the end. So try not to do it this time. And for the second half of the show. So the first half is a general chat about the season so far and beyond, and then the second half of the show is, as usual, a Q&A. So dotted about the room, there is paper, there are pens. Please do write down some questions. Grab me at the interval if you haven't got one and you want to ask a question, and then we will ask our lovely panel these questions for the second half of the show. But for now, please, a round of applause for our panel.
It's the True Faith Podcast Live, and before I bring in our esteemed guests, I have a small announcement to make. Over here to our left, we're very, very privileged to be joined by Sarah, Darren Eales, and Peter Silverson from Newcastle United. And I just want to... I just want to take a moment to thank them, because we've been doing these shows since 2017, when Newcastle United were really fucking shit. And it's just a bit surreal to be sat here on stage with all of you guys celebrating Newcastle United as the Champions League club, and people from Newcastle United taking up their own spare time to come down and sit with all of you and listen to these guys. So just once again, round of applause, not just for the guys coming, but their efforts this season into turning Newcastle United into a Champions League football club. Yep, Keith, you got a mic, mate. There should be enough mics, so there's one knocking around somewhere.
There we go.
We're sorted. Get in. It's 1-0 already. Right. I'm going to start off, lads. I want to go along the panel, so we'll start with you, Craig. I just want you to sum up for the room, you guys as professionals, how has this season been covering Newcastle United for you?
First of all, cheers, everyone. How appropriate, cans, eh? There you go. Actually, I very nearly didn't make tonight. I've been down in London. I was at the game yesterday, and I covered the playoff final on Saturday at Wembley with Luton. And my desk in London said, instead of going back up Newcastle today, can you go to Luton to do their victory bus parade? Not really. if I didn't have this event, I would have made up one. But I said, I've got to come back. I said, you know, it's the hottest ticket in town. There's basically only this and Sam Fender people are talking about this summer. And I said that Darren Eales is going to be there, and he's going to give all us guys an off-the-record briefing on the transfer budget. So... if I haven't got a figure tomorrow morning, Darren, I'm in trouble, so... no pressure. This season, it's been brilliant. It's been a privilege to cover. It's been incredible. And I don't want to talk for too long, because there's so many different facets to it. I just want to pick one part of it as to why I think Newcastle will be playing Champions League football, and that's the manager. I think he is the overriding... Freddie... I think he's the overriding accelerating factor that has put Newcastle United in the top four. Now, listen, generally, I don't rate managers. I don't think they're very good. I think the best thing about our job is we're so lucky in that, you know, we get to see behind the curtain. We get to sit from where I am to where you guys are two or three times a week, and you really get to know these guys, and you see the strengths, you see their weaknesses, and I think everyone will back me up on this. This fella is absolutely the real deal. He honestly really is. This idea that Eddie Howe could be Newcastle's appointment who takes them so far before they bring in a big-ass, sexier name is absolute nonsense. They've got the guy who can take them to the very top. They really have. I think he's tremendous. He's hardworking. He's honest. He's genuine. He's intelligent. And I know you guys love listening to him in the press conferences. You know, you're proud to have him as your manager, and so you should be. And he, for me... the improvement he's brought about in every single player, those who have come to the club, those he's inherited. I mean, you know, how on earth have, you know, Jacob Murphy, with all, you know, respect, you know, Sean Longstaff, Joe Linton, these players who are written off, they're now top four Champions League players. And for me, he is the reason for that. So there you go. Anyhow.
Keith, same question, mate.
Just as you're talking there, I'm just thinking about these players. You talk about guys like Joe Linton now. He's probably worth like 60, 70 million pounds. You know,
140.
A year and a half ago, you probably wouldn't have got much for him at all. Almiron the same. So he's actually strengthened the players that are there. He's strengthened the club. It's been amazing to see. And I think the way he deals with us guys as well, he's always got time for you. And he's just... he really is a pleasure to deal with. Listen, the league games this season, some of the results have obviously been amazing. There's almost too many to kind of remember. I mean, the Man United win at home after the Carabao Cup final defeat was unbelievable. Followed up soon after with that 6-1 win against Tottenham. I had the audacity of asking Eddie Howe the day before that, would a draw be a good result today? Fast forward sort of 23 hours and 21 minutes and it was 5-0. Was it 5-0 after 21 minutes? Listen, it's been amazing. For me, the highlight of the season, despite all the amazing league performances and the other night, last Monday against Leicester, was the build-up, actually. The morning, early afternoon at Wembley. I spent about 2-3 hours milling around outside the stadium, speaking to fans and just trying to get a sort of flavour of how people were feeling, and the emotion was just so high. It was honestly something I'll always remember. I just thought, you know, speaking to all these generations of supporters who have never been there, I've never seen it, guys with their granddads and, you know, girls with their mums and their grandmothers and families being there and not being there with their mates because they wanted to be there with their family and embrace the moment. It was amazing. I found myself a couple of times really kind of quite close to tears because the emotion from them was kind of sort of rubbing off on me and I could feel it. And listen, the league's been amazing. Craig's right in what he says about Eddie and the players and the improvement. But I just, the real connection between supporters and football club for me came that day in the build-up to that cup final. And obviously, it wasn't the result that any of us wanted, but I just feel it was fate. I just feel that wasn't Newcastle United's time. It was maybe a little bit too early. The time will come, but just for the supporters just to get that little snapshot of what could be, what will be moving forward was just amazing to see. And that, for me, there's been some great performances, some great days, but that is the one thing I'll take from this season. I thought that day in the build-up to the game, forget about the game afterwards, was just a real privilege to be there and to report on it.
Thank you, Mark. Same question.
So you ask professionally what it's like. I think the main thing for me, I kind of looked around the press room on Monday, and it was packed on Monday. And I remember sort of so many games for Newcastle at the end of the season where they weren't in a relegation fight, where nobody cared. And, you know, nationally, they weren't a story. So for us as journalists, you know, this patch was dying before this takeover happened. You know, people were talking, people were fearful for their jobs, or they were worried about having to get shunted out to Yorkshire or other places, you know, because Newcastle were in the Premier League, Sunderland still in the Championship, Middlesbrough nowhere. So for us, professionally, to become the hot ticket, to know that a Newcastle United line can get you on the back page, people are interested in interviews that we can do as well. So for us, professionally, it has changed everything. It's got me the job that I'm in now, because I don't think they would have employed somebody in Newcastle before, because they would have said, oh, we need somebody in Manchester. But now they can see that the North East Newcastle is the coming story, and they kind of want somebody here. They want somebody who's going to be able to tell that story, because they know that this is probably the biggest story in terms of the top four this season, because everybody knew Manchester were in the league. Manchester United, a bit of a story, but you know, is it anything compared to this? So it has professionally been absolutely fantastic to see. I'm sure these guys will all say the same. The club have been helpful. I remember the day after the takeover happened, I had Lee Marshall, the press officer, sort of ring me up and suddenly say, so look, have you got any ideas for things you'd like to do with the club? And I was like, I had to check it was the right number. I thought somebody was taking a piss. I thought it was Craig putting on an accent, but it was brilliant. And I think that phone call sort of summed up the whole attitude of the club this year. You know, they've been much more helpful. I think they know that they've got a really good story to tell, and they want to tell it as well. So it has been a pleasure. And I think gate and match days have been events you've wanted to be involved. I think, you know, it doesn't matter who they're playing. If you're not covering that game, you're gutted. You'd rather be here than anywhere else in the country as a kind of Northern football correspondent. This is the big story. So it has been an absolute pleasure. And I think I just want to mention, you know, these guys mentioned Eddie Howe. Me, the thing that has been so impressive, and we're kind of thinking about it on the taxi over, because we were talking about Anthony Gordon,
And how I do think he's going to come good, by the way. I think he's really good. The recruitment, since these people have taken over the club and since this ownership has taken over the club, has been absolutely exceptional. Bruno Guimaraes, Sven Botman, Alexander Isak. I mean, how much would they cost you this summer as opposed to what they cost you last summer? I still can't believe that Isak came in for the amount of money that they spent for him. What a signing he is going to be. Everybody's talking about Harry Kane, 100 million this summer. I honestly think Isak could be a £150 million footballer as soon as maybe next season if he scores the amount of goals we think he's going to do this season. So for me, it's been the recruitment, and it's also just been an absolute pleasure to cover Newcastle this season. And so thank you guys for what you've managed to do to the club already.
Yeah, I mean, personally, professionally, those lines have blurred for me so much this season. I feel like I've fallen in love again, I think, to be honest. I was in the away end at Chelsea yesterday, and I was writing about that, but I was there because I wanted to be as well. And that 5 minutes, 10 minutes after the match, where it just felt like we were rinsing every single second out of this season, and I didn't want it to end. And if I think back to 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I didn't want seasons to start. You're laughing, but I'm being serious. And I think we all had that sense that something that we were connected to umbilically was fraying and was snapping, and we were losing something, and the club was withering in front of us, and it was dying in front of us. And as much as you as fans, we as journalists, tried to explain that to the world, nobody was fucking listening. And I think one of the things that I've loved so much about this season is that, and I'm sure we'll come on to talk about the manager in greater depth, is that he's recognised something about us as a team, as a club, as a region, a city, that I think we'd forgotten, because we'd had it kind of beaten out of us a bit, that there is a power in saying fuck you to the rest of the world. And I hope people don't mind me swearing, because I'm going to. And there is, you know, that this idea of being liked and being popular that he's talked about so eloquently is a nonsense. And people ignored us during the Ashley era. We were ignored and we were patronised, and he's recognised this about us, and the team have played with this kind of amazing rage and ferocity. And as it's gone on, I mean, my touchstone seasons will always be 92, 93, 93, 94 under Keegan, just because the electricity around the city, the football being played. But it's the same now. It is the same now. It's not the same football. There is a bit more pragmatism to it. They know how to win matches. They know how not to lose matches. But the aggression, the front foot style, all the rest of it, I think this team have been incredible. I think they'll be remembered forever, and I'll remember this season forever. I think it's arguably my favourite ever.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
What was the question again?
How has this season... Can you sum up this season for our audience from a professional perspective?
Yes, I can. As someone who's not from this region or from this city and moved here, well, I basically came up here because of Kevin Keegan's Newcastle. I came to Newcastle University because something awakened in my imagination about this city, and it was all to do with my love of football, and I fell in love with the city. And it is a region of the country that gets ignored, as George had just said. It gets patronised, it gets mocked, and what this football club has done in very, very powerfully and very, very emotionally, it's given this city its pride back, and it's given its pride back to its people as well. And the city feels different. And I don't think there's another place in the UK where it is quite as powerful as it is in Newcastle. And it's been a pleasure to be a part of. And I fell in love with the region. I wasn't in love with the football club. I wasn't in love with my job. I had ummed and ahed about whether to move down to Manchester. Was been under a little bit of pressure to do so from work. We stayed for family reasons. And it's given me my love of football back, as George has said there. It's given me a love of my job back. I'm fucking exhausted. I'm really, really tired. And I do want a break. But it's been an exhilarating season. And you know, there's not much more I can add to what the other guys said here. Eddie Howe is a genius, and I don't use that word lightly. He's probably the best manager. And bearing in mind, I started my journalistic career with Bobby Robson, who was a hero of mine as a childhood. I think he is the best manager I've worked with or for or covered in my 21 years covering Newcastle United and North East football. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's got the perfect personality to manage the club. He hates praise. He hates celebrity life. He doesn't want to be spotted. He doesn't want to be adulated. He just wants to work. But he instinctively gets what the people of this city are about and what the football club is about. And people have talked about understanding what this football club is about before, but I don't think any of them have really nailed it as much as he has. And I think he has led that filtered into the dressing room. And I think it's really, really strong. Again, I keep using the word powerful. I should probably widen my vocabulary. But the amount of Geordies that are in the dressing room as well, I think that has been a big thing that Howe recognised straight away. We may all laugh at Paul Dummett because he doesn't ever play, but he is important, and I, you know, he will get a new deal because I think Eddie understands that connection between city and club and region. And it's really, really great. It's just really great that you, not me, I'm not a fan, I never will be a fan, but it's great that my wife's family and you guys have all got your football club back. It's a very easy sentence to say, but I think this is a really, really exciting time. I think it's the start of something. I don't think it's the end. I think we're going to be talking in the next 5 to 10 years about Newcastle United being one of the biggest and best clubs in Europe. And that is just an amazing thing to come out of my mouth.
Hear to all of that. I just wanted to add something about Eddie Howe that relates back to yesterday. So can I get it out of the way at the start? That Keith, you talked about kind of feeling emotional at times. The biggest kind of wave of emotion I felt yesterday was right at the end when, as I said, you know, fans are still there 5-10 minutes after the final whistle. Team, players, squad, staff are all there. No one wants to quite let go. And then Eddie sort of half turns to go, and it's like he's been injected with something. And suddenly he turns back, and there's that fist pump, and he's like got his palms outstretched as if he's conducting this orchestra. And it was like, oh my God, that you know, he doesn't show emotion.
No emotion, no.
He doesn't show emotion. I mean, having said that, he showed a lot of emotion at Bournemouth when he went back to Bournemouth this season.
But where it's Ten Hag.
And yeah. But it was like this absolutely fantastic moment. How has this fella sort of tapped into this thing about us, this aggression and ferocity? How does he get it? And, you know, you just long for him to sort of appreciate what he's done. And does he know how much he's adored and loved? And does he realise what he's unleashed? And I thought that was the perfect end to the season until, of course, Sven Botman pushes Jason, Mad Dog, Tyndall, copyright, True Faith, once, twice, back towards the away end. And then suddenly you've got this mahogany god.
Mahogany god?
Like white teeth glinting in the dying sun of Stamford Bridge, and he's on his feet, this incredible, looking like the pump lord of all time, and he's pumping his fists, and he's... And that was actually the end. That was the perfect end to the season. That was absolutely the perfect end to the season, because we're all living in Jason Tyndall's world.
Did you say the word pump lord?
It's a phrase, but okay. Yes, I did, yes.
Just wanted to clarify that.
Can I just add as well? See, just seeing this tonight, before we came out here, I said to my girlfriend, I went, the fucking season's over, right? We're all knackered. Look, you said that there, you're knackered. Yeah. I got in the taxi with Craig, he sat there, he went, I'm shattered. I went, I know, me too. Like, we're done, and it's just been such a long season. And I said to her before I came, I said, oh, we're going to this event tonight. I think they sold 500 tickets. I said, they still want to just keep talking about football. Like, the season, see, like, when are they going to want to stop talking to me? She goes, why? We're Geordies, man. We want to talk about nonstop. And I'm just like, I mean, this, as George sort of touched on there, like, in previous seasons, once the season was finished, you just wanted to forget about it and just like concentrate on your summer, switch off. It's almost like the talk, and we're now talking about transfer targets, budget, all that kind of stuff. We're now moving on to that already. We've not even had, 24 hours since the Chelsea game, and that's because obviously there's such a hunger and everyone's just desperate for any scrap of information. And I have to say, it's amazing to see the day after the season's finished and there's 500 people in here to listen to us guys.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we love these events. We're all absolutely shattered. We want a break, but, you know, we love coming down and doing them. We all said to Alex, you know, if you give us sort of £100 each and a free bar, we'll do it for nothing.
Well, the first question took 25 minutes. Thanks, lads.
You did invite Luke, to be fair, you know.
We'll keep him short on that.
Yeah, we've got a lot to get through, so I won't come to everyone and every question, okay? But I will, you know, get to you all fairly, because you're all as important as each other.
Are you offering these people a fee? I don't take money for this.
Same fee you offer me for athletic work, George.
the second best Newcastle podcast.
Second best Newcastle podcast, he said it. I want to talk about the Champions League. That'll shock you, but I want to talk about the Champions League. Anyone here in here not a season ticket holder? Few people. Well, if you thought it was hard to get tickets to Southampton at home, let's see what this ticket website's capable for Real Madrid. Craig, I'll start with you because you went to Milan recently.
Before anyone asks what I saw, no, I didn't.
I'll rephrase this. The trajectory of this football club is extraordinary. I mean, maybe it'll get lost in years to come, what Eddie Howe did last season. In terms of miracles, what Newcastle have done this season is unbelievable, from 11th to 4th. But to stay up last season, to finish 17th last season would have been a miracle. So to do what we did, and I think we're the fourth best team in the league after January last season, was class, to be honest with you.
To totally change the style of play in between.
Exactly. You know, and that Arsenal game at the end of last season was a real... I remember doing a podcast saying, if that's what we're in for next season, thank fuck. Yes, it was. It was exactly what we're in for this season. But Newcastle United got Champions League football to contend with next season, Craig, and it's going to be hard. Just, you know, having some conversations there in the little green room we've got. Someone said that the average league position of a team that qualifies for the Champions League for the first time was in the Champions League for the first time in a while is actually 8th the next season.
Thanks, I was going to say that.
how do Newcastle United next season, how do they approach their season for you? What's more important, the Premier League or the Champions League?
Well, it's funny. I mean, myself, Mark and Luke were in a Sunday briefing with Eddie for the Sunday papers just on Friday there. And I genuinely asked the question, can you win the Champions League? And no one fell about laughing. And we had to sort of pinch ourselves and think, and these are the questions you actually having to ask now. You know, how far can you go in the tournament next year? And, you know, I was lucky enough to be in Milan covering the second leg of the Champions League semi-final last week. And honestly, I say this, Newcastle now are better than those both Milan clubs. They really are. You know, Javier Manquillo would captain AC Milan. It's incredible how bad they are. So to that end, I don't think there's massive surgery needed to make Newcastle competitive in the Champions League. And, you know, when we see the groups come out last week, I think we're all looking at the pots, aren't we? And you're thinking, okay, brilliant. Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, AC Milan, all the rest of it. But I don't think they should necessarily think like that. Yes, get one good of the, you know, in pot one of the nice glamour ones to go to. But in pot two and three, get teams you can beat. This Newcastle team, for me, could go deep. Bearing in mind, I think, even now where they are, they will be competitive before a summer of recruitment. Now, what do they need to do? I do think they need more goals coming from wide. I think yesterday I was down at Chelsea, and as much as I love Miguel Almirón for the character he is and the player he was earlier in the season, I think yesterday wasn't the worst thing in just reminding us that those two chances he had, I think at the very top level against a team like a Chelsea in the Champions League, you need a killer in those wide areas. Took a call today. I think they're looking at Ferran Torres, who's out at Barcelona, is one name who's on the radar. I really do think, as much as the focus has been on midfield and left back and the right side at centre half, I think a goal scoring winger, you look at, you know, Liverpool have got Salah, Saka at Arsenal, Martinelli, Grealish, Foden, those sorts of players. But I honestly don't think they're far away. And with another, as Mark said, you know, with another summer of recruitment, which they have absolutely nailed, they haven't got one wrong so far, with another summer of that, with a budget which has been massively boosted by qualification for the Champions League, I think they really can be competitive. And yeah, 12 months time, we could be sat here with a great big replica Champions League trophy on the table, couldn't we?
Charlotte, wherever you are, can you book the Sage for this time next year? We'll need a bigger venue. Moving on then, George, I want to ask you this question. I've got questions for you guys, and feel free to chip in at the end if anyone wants to add on to what anyone says. What are you looking forward to more, George, next season? Is it the trips across Europe, or is it Wednesday and Tuesday night, the City of Newcastle upon Tyne? You're driving home from work, you see the lights on the stadium at about 5 p.m, and the city is alive. What, in terms of Champions League qualification, mate, what does it mean for you?
You're worse than my boss. It's like, the season just finished yesterday. It's like, what's next? Well, what's next? I want to get pissed, and I want to just enjoy.
Okay, keep same question, mate.
I want to enjoy this. I mean, I honestly haven't like even really considered that. I mean, I do sort of think as we've got closer to it, I've had that sort of feeling. You know, talk a lot to sort of Dan Burn after matches, because he always stops in the mix zone, bless him, and he's struggling to wrap his head around that idea of him watching Bobby's team playing in the Champions League. You know, Juventus he talks about, and then there's the chance that he might be doing the same thing next season. I love that. I mean, I was lucky enough to report on Newcastle in the Champions League last time. I can't remember a single fucking thing about it, I have to be honest. But I do, you know, I can't wait. It's going to stretch everybody to offer a bit of balance to what Craig said. You know, it's the first time. It's going to be the first time for a lot of these players, first time for the management, first time, you know, all of us have done that sort of thing of travelling, and it tires you out. But the other side of it is that the club has risen to absolutely every single challenge that it's had thrown at it so far and passed it with flying colours. It takes me back, though, to one of those remarkable, ridiculous interviews that Mike Ashley did. I think it was after probably the seventh or eighth time he tried and failed to sell the club. And do you remember he said, I'm not going anywhere until we win a trophy or qualify for the Champions League. He said, and by that I also mean the Champions League. And that was one of the problems about the club. It was like this idea that getting into the Champions League was an end in itself. And it's not. And the conversations they're having at the club at the moment, one of the you know, I'm not speaking on their behalf, but the idea, they're totally conscious that it's not about getting there once. It's about getting there again, and it's about being there regularly. And what can they do to mitigate against that? This is way ahead of schedule. You know, we all have to understand that and appreciate that. And, you know, if Newcastle were to finish sixth next season, I think that's an incredible season next season, by the way. But, yeah, and it's about the bigger picture. It's not just about next season. It's about making sure Newcastle can compete at the top level for years to come. That's the thing that really excites me. Yeah, but, I mean, you know, you talk about Barcelona and Real Madrid, all those clubs. I mean, it's just insane, the whole thing. You know, the whole thing's insane. Wonderful.
Just
wonderful.
Jump in, Alex. They've got a lot of work to do this summer. Hi, guys. the squad, as it stands, I don't think is equipped to play in Europe at the moment. I think they were fortunate with injuries this season. How often do you go through a whole campaign and have your first choice two centre-backs? Not get injured, one of them get injured. Your captain and probably your best defender, Kieran Trippier, doesn't get injured at the age he is. If they were to lose Bruno for any length of period of time in midfield, they haven't got the depth that those other Champions League clubs have. And that's why they're in the Champions League. They get more money, they build the squad up, they build the squad depth up. That's where Newcastle are at a disadvantage. So to pick up on what George said there, there will probably be some sort of reset next season in terms of league finish. But it's going to be a wonderful journey, a wonderful ride. And I think we were talking earlier about, would you take finishing eighth and get to like the latter stages of the Champions League? Would you take eighth and semi-finals of the Champions League? Yes, I would take a semi-final of the Champions League and eighth all day, every day. But I think the league form will drop off. But it is a huge summer. FFP is a problem. I'm sure Darren will talk about that. But they've got a lot of work to do. They've got pretty much every single decision right so far. But I think this is a really, really big summer, a huge summer for them. Because if they are going to stay and sustain this success, the squad, as it currently is not equipped to do that. They could be in trouble if they don't get the recruitment right, but I'm sure they will. They're very good people, and they're stood left to me. And Peter's probably in striking distance, I think so. It's a big summer. It's a big summer. They've got a lot of work to do, and I think it's been the perfect season, but they've got to probably add, for me, four or five elite players. I think the manager's called for that, and I'm sure they will do. I'm sure they will do.
Yeah, I mean, one of the stats which I think reinforces Luke's point is there's only 14 players have started five of them Premier League games. They've been working with such a small pool. Now, while those players have been excellent, yes, they have been extremely lucky. So when I said before they're in major surgery, I think Kevin Keegan always had this phrase like, go out and buy better. And while I adhere to that, they probably will struggle to get better than Alexander Isak, will struggle to get better than Bruno Guimarães. What they need is another two or three of those. So you get to the point where perhaps Miguel Almirón does become a substitute, you know. But yeah, as we said, you would trust these guys to get it right again because they've got it so right so far. But it is a big summer, and they haven't got an absolute bottomless pit. They're going to have to be clever, going to have to manoeuvre again. But you would back them to get it right.
They're lovely problems to have, aren't they? These, by the way, like I remember every summer when I seemed to work for the Chronicle. Every summer seemed to be some depressing story that we had to cover. Rafa Benitez, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Signing just Vernon and Ita after they got into the Europa League, you know, we're kind of like, we are talking here about amazing problems to have. And I think what's nice about the dilemmas that we're all talking about here is it's all, you know, you can trust the people at the top of the football club that they are aiming to improve it. Progress is the mantra of this football club now. And that is the big difference between now and what we had a few years ago. I think we have to accept that. I can't think of a single mistake that has been made since the takeover happened. I can't, you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of a single one. We've got to accept that there are going to be mistakes. And I think probably as a fan base, we maybe have to be a little bit understanding if there are mistakes that happen and things, you know, management errors and things like that. But, you know, there hasn't been one yet. But, you know, the overall journey, the overall route of travel is progress. And I think, whatever happens this summer, you know, we know that the people at the top are aiming to progress the football club. They want to make it one of the best in Europe. And I don't think you could have said that about the people that had the club before. And I think that is the main thing for me that I'll take away from this season is that, you know, you have to have some trust in the people, in the boardroom and the people, in the dugout, because they are all aiming for the best and they are sincerely, honest about that. And I think that's what's so great about this close season.
The good thing about being in the Champions League is that you're more attractive now to players. I mean, speaking to agents and people involved in transfers over the last season or two, it was always like Newcastle are on the up, but we want our player to go. He wants to play Champions League. You kept hearing that all the time. Well, you are going to be playing Champions League now. So it's much more attractive destination now for players to come to. But kind of what moving on from what Craig said there, if you add three or four players to that squad that can come in and, you know, similar sort of quality to what you've got already, a new centre-half, at least one midfielder, a forward, maybe two midfielders, suddenly the whole squad starts looking a lot stronger. And I think that can take you quite far. I do think, as the others have said as well, it'll be difficult to get a top four finish again in the Premier League. I really do. I think top eight would be seen as a success. Although saying that, we sat here exactly a year ago and gave our predictions for the season. I predicted sixth, and even then I was like, I'm probably shooting for the stars a little bit. And there you go, you finish fourth. So listen, things can happen, and with Eddie Howe at the helm, you know, you have to trust that things are going to go well. But I just feel it'll be really difficult to keep that level of performance every Saturday when you've played on a Tuesday, Wednesday night beforehand, away from home in Milan or Madrid or whatever it is.
Having said that, the Premier League is probably going to be weaker next year, isn't it? If you look at the teams in it, the top seven, top eight, I think is strong. The top four, top five, top six is going to be a bit more competitive. But I think below that, Sheffield United coming up, there's nothing to worry about there. I don't think Luton... You know, I don't think it's as strong and as deep as it used
but
to be.
To take that a bit further, the Anita Summer, you are right. After finishing fifth, is our very own version of what we're talking about. You know, Newcastle didn't strengthen. Ike Ashley was furious about finishing fifth. He was. He wanted to finish fourth.
And before that, George, there's a Lee Bowyer summer, wasn't there?
Yeah. And, you know, we absolutely made a habit of not strengthening from that position of strength. And although the European part of that season, the following season, was absolutely fantastic in the sense it brought back all those memories, had a chance to sort of do all that over again, it immediately put Alan Pardew under pressure, and he never recovered from it. And the league was an absolute struggle. It was horrible. But what I wanted to say is that the incredible thing you talk about, you know, maybe sitting here next summer with the Champions League trophy, you talk about booking out the Sage for the do next season. The thing you can say...
I haven't got the price yet, George.
The thing that you can say with cast iron certainty is that although there may be a dip in form next season, Newcastle may have a couple of injuries, they may lose a couple of games, Newcastle United will be stronger this time next year on the pitch and off the pitch than it is now. You know that for a fact. They're building the club off the pitch. They're building the team. And the club will be better prepared and better situated than it is now. That's an incredible thing. How many times have we ended seasons thinking, okay, that was awful, and what do we have to look forward to next year? Or, okay, that was all right, but what do we have to look forward to next year? This time next year, the club will be stronger, better, bigger, and better equipped to tackle what's ahead.
And if... And if the season after next do drop into the Europa League, you know, we get to do all the stag do cities. Did anyone else look? We've gone too quick. We've missed all. I was like, stag do. The Champions League's Milan, Madrid. You know, I'm going to have to wear my chinos and my white shirt. It's, so if the do drop down, we have got that to look forward to.
I'll just add a little bit of fan-led optimism about next season. I absolutely get what everyone's saying. You guys know lots about the football club. You've just demonstrated that historically and presently. But I think fourth place and 71 points does Newcastle a disservice this season. I think that Newcastle lost the least amount of games, apart from maybe Brighton away, which we didn't lose, in Villa away. I don't think Newcastle were bested in any fixture that they lost. I think Newcastle finished still top of that oh-so-important league, who's hit the post and the crossbar the most. It's a lot of goals, and you know, even during the quote unquote difficult spells this season, Newcastle's issue is that they were dominating games and not putting teams to bed. So, like you guys say, if we can find a midfield player who's a little bit better at unlocking the Leicester Cities and the Leeds Uniteds at homes, which we didn't do, if we can have a replacement for Bruno Guimarães, because, I mean, you are, one of you made the point there about the two centre-backs playing all season, absolutely right. Newcastle didn't win a game without Bruno Guimarães this season. Imagine if he'd been fit. Wow. Like, if he'd been fit all season, where would we have finished? So you're right, but I also feel like Newcastle are on such a journey. Who's going to stop us? Who's going to stop us with three, four quality players? Who's going to stop us on Champions League nights? I really think we're going to push, and probably the club would hate me for saying this. That's what I say, but I think we can push Man City and Arsenal. I'm not looking below, I'm looking above, because we're absolutely fucking class. Keith, you know, I enjoy watching you on TV and on YouTube, and you spend a lot of time with these players who play for Newcastle United. I just want you to give the room a little bit of a flavour of what someone like Alexander Isak and one of the guys said before, you know, what a footballer to play for this club. What are these guys like as people, and what have they been like in this running? Because one of the key facets of this season, one of the key things that you like, Sir Gary Neville said, is the pressure will get to them. The pressure, they haven't been in this position before, they'll crumble. Liverpool will catch them. What didn't happen, is that something that you picked up on when talking to these guys week in, week out?
Yeah, well, just in terms of their personality, firstly, George mentioned a moment ago, Dan Byrne, and you know, he's always stopping and speaking afterwards in the mix zone. I think he did a meet and greet in Blythe over the weekend in his free time, which shows everything about him. The last interview, player interview I did was Thursday with Bruno Guimarães. Sit down with him, and just to give you a little insight into terms of his personality, sat down, and started asking me about what my plans were for the summer. You know, and I've never had that before from a player. He's like, where
what are you doing, Cave?
And you're more famous than him. So.
I had to tell a few lies. Anyway, he said, I mean, listen, I don't know if he was just being nice and trying to like kill some time, but he's like, so where are you going, what are you doing, where do you live, and all this. I'm thinking, geez, is this for real? Like, and everyone says, Eddie Howe tries to bring characters to the club, people, good personalities, people that they'll fit in, you know, people that aren't going to like upset the apple cart, knock on his door, kick off in the background. And that for me was a real example of what he means by that. He sat there, he was actually interested in me. Like, he actually wanted to know things about me. And I just thought it was unbelievable. He then went on to tell me that his wedding is a couple of weeks' time in Rio, and Joe Linton, who he only met 16 months ago, is his best man. So, that to me told everything about the team spirit and the togetherness in the camp, in that, you know, a man who he met less than a year and a half ago is now the best. I mean, I think when Bruno signed, everyone was saying, oh, let's get Paqueta as well, that's his best mate. He's dumped him quick enough, as you know.
Say, yeah.
And it was, he's moved on to Joe Linton pretty quickly. Joe Linton's been in the gym, got himself beefed up and stuff. So anyway, listen, he was, it's just a pleasure to speak to these guys, it really is. I mean, even like guys like Kieran Tripp, guys like Kieran Tripp here as well, who's come in, makes an effort to sort of speak to everyone before the game and after. Again, he's just an absolute leader, and you can tell. I mean, we were chatting to Darren and Peter earlier, and they had, I think they had a bit of a night out on Tuesday to celebrate a staff night out. Some of the players were like, you know what, we're going to go along to that. Turned up and had a few beers and enjoyed it as well. And would you have ever got that in the Newcastle United in the past? Would you have ever got anything like that? No. So to answer your question, the real people that Eddie Howe's signing, like Eddie Howe is, a real person. And it is great to talk to them. And I always feel that they're more than happy to sit, answer questions, chat to you for as long as you want. You never get that feeling that they're sitting there just kind of like doing it because they have to. They actually enjoy talking to you. And that's a really good example of the football club.
I do remember distinctly, and I think it was maybe 6 or 7 years ago, where Newcastle rolled out the idea that they were going to charge us all to get interviews. It wasn't that long ago.
2015.
And the terms were...
Don't get any ideas.
Oh, we should have said that. and we sort of said to them at the time, like, you know, look, you've got these players with their stories to tell. You know, these guys are... And, you know, like, I do agree this is a particularly good group in terms of stopping and talking to you, and that, you know, they're really good characters. But I think, to be fair, throughout the years, There's always been good characters in the Newcastle United dressing room. They haven't been as good players, I think it's fair to say, but there's always been good characters in there. But the club had this really short-sighted attitude that will charge you to tell their stories. And it meant that you guys couldn't get to know them a little bit better. So you got, you know, you had players back in the day who, you know, who were good characters, people who wanted to get to know the city and wanted to get to know the region, but they were never allowed to tell their stories. They were never allowed to kind of make a connection with you as fans. They were never, you know, social media was sort of not quite as big as it is now, but they were never able to tell those stories. They were never able to kind of, they were told not to trust anybody who wanted to ask them questions. And I think what has been really good about this year is that they have told their stories. And, you know, you see what a guy like Bruno has gone through to get to the level he's at, and Joelinton as well. You know, I think it's no surprise the amount of likes and you know, like celebration there was yesterday about his Brazil cap. This is a guy who Rochdale away in the FA Cup was being hounded off the pitch by some supporters, you know, but I don't think it was anything personal. I think it was this idea that we've got this guy sitting in an ivory castle who's, you know, record signing, and actually nothing could be further from the truth. He's a really, really nice guy. And, you know, a guy who has worked so hard to get to the level that he's at. But now we know a little bit more about him. He's done loads of interviews, talked about his life and his career, and we've got to know him. And I think it just adds to this kind of, you know, unity and synergy between fans and players. And I think, you know, it's been great to read, you know, I mean, we're all competitors in some ways, but it's been great to read the interviews that these guys have got and, you know, to get a few interviews of our own. And I think the press office said to us, like, they've given every single person who's asked this year a one-to-one interview. And I think, you know, I've never known that in my entire time. You know, you ask for something and you do get it. And, you know, I think that has been a really progressive and a really positive thing that they've managed to do this year.
Keith mentioned at the top of his answer there, Dan Byrne. And for me, there's no player more than Dan Byrne captures the journey Newcastle have been on. And he's a, you know, they've got this policy, this no dickhead policy. And Dan Byrne is the exact opposite of that. He's such a good lad. And I was lucky enough to be at a dinner with him a couple of weeks ago. It was the reunion for the 92-93 promotion side, 30 years on, up at the Gosforth Park, the Marriott, and Dan Byrne was on my table. And so was John Beresford. And John Beresford was sat next to Dan Byrne. And I thought, oh, this is dangerous. The last person you want in Dan Byrne's ear for 3 hours talking about defending is John fucking Beresford. But, you know, Dan was an absolute gent. The fact there was a journalist on the table didn't bother him. He was a grown-up about it. He interacted with all of them, Beresford, Bracewell, Lee Clark. He was absolutely brilliant. Next game, what's he going to do after 3 hours of John Beresford? Brighton? He scores his first league goal for Newcastle. So there you go. Yeah, they're going to bring in Philippe Albert to talk to Sven Botman ahead of next season. But on that night as well, Dan brought his dad along with him, and it was my friend who had organised the night, and he texted my friend and said, "No, can I bring my dad? It's his birthday." He said, my friend replied, "Yeah, absolutely no problem. Wonderful. We'll get a shirt made up for him. We'll get all the lads of 92, 93 to sign it." Dan Byrne replied, "You know, that's very nice of you. You know, no need to make a fuss. We're just happy with the tickets. By the way, his name's David." So on the night, and this just captures, you know, the connection between supporters, the past, the current players. On the night, you had Kevin Keegan stood on the stage where I am now with a microphone, leading 500 people in singing happy birthday to Dan Byrne's dad. It was quite something. It was incredible. But yeah, George, you know, you've got to know Dan quite well. And I think to go back to what I said at the top there, he is someone who just really does capture, you know, how on earth is Dan Byrne, someone who was plucked from Brighton, he's played out of position every game this season, and he's took his hometown club into the Champions League. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, not good enough. Not good enough, apparently. Not good enough for Newcastle, but he's been good enough for fourth place. He's good enough for the Champions League. He's good enough to take Newcastle to Wembley. I love him. I'm very fickle in my affection, I have to be honest. I transfer it from player to player. But
More than Isaac Hayden?
sorry to do this to you, Isaac. But
he loves a squad crush, George. He's always got one.
I do. It's been...
Poor Matt Ritchie.
It's, I know. Poor Kieran Trippier. But no, I adore him. I mean, all his family, by the way, were in the away end at Chelsea yesterday wearing Burn shirts and all the rest of it. How many times have we seen Bruno and Bruno's family? You know, they're warriors. The thing I love about them, I mean, you don't have to be connected like that in a dressing room to be successful. You don't have to go very far to kind of look at that. You know, talk about some of the great Manchester United sides. Wasn't it Cole and Sheringham who didn't speak to each other, yes, but were very good.
Like the press box, really.
Yeah, and worked together on the pitch. And of course, you know, Bobby's Newcastle team was full of spiky characters like Bellamy and Dyer and the rest of it. You know, and there were pulls and tensions between the squad, but it worked on a Saturday. The beautiful thing, though, about this team is how they all do love each other. There's a genuine bond between them. And, you know, they've spoken very openly about that. And when it does happen, there's a kind of magic to it, I think. And, you know, Bruno's played on this season. His ankle's an absolute mess, covered in bruises. He wanted to play. Dan Burns' shoulder keeps popping out. You know, it's dislocated. He wants to play. He carries on. And, you know, there's just a kind of a real feeling of closeness there. And they had this desperation. You know, it wasn't supposed to be their turn this season. It wasn't supposed to be their time. You know, they are way ahead of schedule, but they've had this drive to be the team that did it, that did something, that were remembered for it. Obviously, there was a chance to do that for the Cup final. We will remember that weekend forever because it was so very, very special. The result didn't go our way. We won the weekend. We lost the match. That's disappointing. We'll come back and win the match. I'm convinced about that. But they are the team that got Newcastle into the top four, and that is such an amazing achievement. And they'll be remembered forever for it. And, yeah, here's to them. Absolutely sensational.
Okay. Thanks. We've run over a little bit, and Mark and Luke, I did have questions for you, but we'll never know what they were. But what I want to do briefly with everyone is I would like a moment of the season. It doesn't have to be. It can be whatever you want. It can be one specific thing. It can be a goal, a game, whatever you want. I'm going to start with you and come this way. So George next. Moment of the season, Luke.
Isak's dribble against Everton.
I actually have watched it so many times. I basically now know it off by heart. It's truly one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen on a football pitch. To call trapeze artist the line. I think he beats four Everton players, some of them twice, one of them three times. It's just phenomenal. Just loved it. Oh, closely followed by Tottenham. I know I was only asked for one, but I'm going to give
you. Yeah, I've got to struggle to keep this together because for me it's Trafalgar Square. I'm not. Thank you.
No, it's.
I might need it, but sorry to bring this down. But my stepdad died that morning, and he introduced me to Newcastle, and so he kind of gave me this life, really. And I was with him when he went into hospital at the start of that week, and I visited him every day. And he told me he was a season ticket holder, and he told me that I had to go to London. And I said, no, I don't. I'm going to stay. And eventually I did go, and it tore me apart to do that. And he said that I have to report back to him from Wembley, and I didn't get the chance to do that. And it felt like, as I was leaving, much against my will, really, much against my better judgment, it felt that football didn't matter. But then when I got to Trafalgar Square, and I was with real proper friends. I was with Alex that day, I was with Charlotte, I was with Luke. I realised that it did matter. And to be there for this once in a sort of generational moment when we're all getting pissed, we're all hugging random strangers, we're with friends, we're with family, we're celebrating the rebirth of a football club. It's what it's all about. And Gordon was with me, and he was with all of us. And yeah, so that's my moment.
Well, I can't offer anything quite as profound as that, I'm afraid. I was like, fuck, he's going to talk that, he's going to give that story.
Just do Isak's dribble.
Do you know what? I'm probably going to take the tone down a little bit, but it was Jacob Murphy's face after he scored that goal against Tottenham. Fucking hell. It was the look of disbelief on his face. He's like, did I just do that? And I think it just sort of summed up what we all thought that day of like, Newcastle United 4-0 up against Tottenham after like 18 minutes or something. And Jacob Murphy scored like the goal of the season. But yeah, I mean, for me, that was just an unbelievable day. And you got lost in the end of it because thinking Spurs were rubbish, but actually, you know, they were fifth in the league and Newcastle were fourth at the time. And, you know, and Jacob Murphy had scored the goal. You know,
is that the only game that I think we've all laughed? Oh, people were just looking at each other and laughing.
I actually said, I think when the fourth goal went in, it was a mixture of cheers and laughter, wasn't it? It was like, it was that weird thing of like, it's sort of this deafening roar. And then it was this sort of like people laughing as well. And it was just, yeah, it was brilliant. And that game will stay with me forever. Like, you don't do that to a really good team. But hopefully Newcastle will do it to it. Really good teams a lot.
I had a tenner on Newcastle to win 4-0 that day, and the bet was done after about 12 minutes. Honestly, I actually could not believe it. It's funny you asked this because I've actually just had to open Soccer Base because I'm trying to remember all the different wins. And I'm like, you just forget about them all. 4-1 away to Southampton, 4-0 at home to Aston Villa, 2-1 away to Tottenham, 6-1 at home to Tottenham, 2-1 at home to Southampton in the cup semi-final, 2-0 against Man United, 5-1 away against West Ham. You actually forget about the amount of... I mean, it's ridiculous when you look and you just see green WWW the whole way down. I think I touched on it earlier. It was the... for me, it was like George, it was Wembley. It was actually the day of the game. And I don't know if many of you saw this. I did a live on Sky Sports News. The clip from it went viral afterwards with... a group of Newcastle fans, and I basically just started. They were live on air, and I'd kind of got this little circle around us of supporters. There was maybe about 100 of them around us, and I kind of earmarked two or three who I was going to go and speak to. And the first guy, he kind of was making himself available. He wanted to speak, and I said, "I'm going to come to you first, sir. Okay?" He said, "Yeah, I'm ready. And we're ready to go live." And introduced, said, "Look, here we are at Wembley, 2 hours till kickoff. There's Newcastle fans everywhere. I've not seen one Manchester United fan anywhere. Newcastle have taken over the city. There's 100,000 in London. How many, tens of thousands at the game. I'm going to come straight to you, sir." And I said, "How are you feeling?" And I put the mic just under his face. Like that. And it was just this pause for a second, and he just started crying. He literally just started crying, like didn't say a word. And he goes, I'm nervous. And I said, "Why are you nervous?" He goes, "I don't even know why I'm nervous." He goes, "I don't even care if we win. It's just being back here." And it was just that moment. And I think I touched on it earlier, the emotion before the game, and it just got me going. The hairs on the back of my neck were standing up, and it just made me. I mean, I've been covering the club here for, it'll be 10 years this September. And obviously I don't remember. I remember watching the Keegan years, but I wasn't involved in it in the sharp end. So I've not seen what the club can be. I've only seen it in the Mike Ashley years. So for me, that day, the build-up to the game, as I've said, in terms of all the games, I mean, there's too many to name. I was going to say the same as Mark, actually, the Spurs game when it was 4-5-0. I know my bet was done, but listen, you're happy for a bet to be done if Newcastle are 5-0 up after 21 mm-hmm. minutes. But yeah, listen, there's been so many amazing wins throughout the season that you forget about. You forget about some of them. And here's to plenty more next season.
I'll do two just quickly, one a match, one a moment. The match, I go back to, and I had to do this for the mail today, actually. I was asked what my favourite game of the season was. And I put a match Newcastle didn't win, and it was the 3-3 draw, Manchester City back in August. Because that was the point I realised, these are fucking good. You know, they really are. The fact they went toe-to-toe to come back from 1-0 down to be 3-1 up against Man City. De Bruyne then turns it on with a masterclass. And Eddie Howe said afterwards, it was an incredible game. And, you know, who are we to disagree? But even though that was amidst a run of games that were drawn when perhaps should have been winning some of them, you just knew then these guys are going to compete. My moment, like the other guys, I go back to the cup final. And my oldest boy went down with my wife. Obviously, we were working, so I didn't see him all day. And then I went back to the hotel afterwards, and he sat on my knee and he told me all about his day. And he now thinks all referees are called stupid bastard, by the way. Which is a real issue. But
with my wife there. He hasn't been back to a game since. But, you know, he sat on my lap and he talked to me about the tube and supporters talking to him and the pain of losing and the referee and this chance and that chance and the own goal. And part of me was just really, take this the right way, really glad Newcastle had lost. It was almost like a rite of passage. I thought, wow, it would have been too easy for you if at your first cup final, your second ever game, you'd come down and Newcastle had won. So in a perverse way, I was just like, yeah, son, you know, this is what being a football fan is about. Everyone in this room has been there. None of us have actually experienced the other side of it. So in a strange way, Newcastle getting beat at Wembley was bloody reassuring.
Just very, very quickly, we asked the same question to Eddie Howe after the Leicester game last week, and it was the most Eddie Howe answer I've ever heard. His favourite moment of the season was the 2-0 win against Nottingham Forest in the opening day. look what's happened since then, and that is the moment that he remembers for the season.
I'll answer mine very quickly. Best game, I think anyone in the away end at Forest will remember that for a lifetime. It was an unbelievable away end, and it's just the injustice of that moment being stolen from Elliot Anderson, and then to score in the last minute, those celebrations were just out of this world. Quick one from me, being 5-0 up after 21 minutes against Spurs was exhausting. I don't know anyone else felt the same. I was like, I stand up in the corner illegally, but not from next season, thanks NUFC. I had to sit down. But I'm also a terrible person, and every time we score at St James's, I like to stick two fingers up the away fans. And the Man United game 2-0, after I'd finished celebrating Wilson's goal, I looked up at the away end, but there was no one fucking there. Okay. We've reached the end of part one, nearly. People are getting up to go to the bar. You don't want to miss this, I trust you. First of all, before we bring on our next guests, very briefly, I want everyone to give a round of applause to these guys for part one. And then I'll ask you all to vacate the stage, please, to make some room, if that's okay. So clap them off. Back. And I'd like to invite onto the stage Peter Silverson and Darren Eales. Take it away, Darren.
Wow. Well, that was a tough act to follow. I mean, first, I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone here. It's my first season. I'm thinking back of all the memories. I remember my first game was a Man City match, and that was when I was just like, blimey, now I've been 7 years in MLS. How good has the Premier League got? It was ridiculous. And the season's just gone from strength to strength. And I think, you know, what really amazed me is just, you know, the fan base, the media that do such a brilliant job. I remember talking to Dan Byrne. I did a piece quite early on at BBC Newcastle. So it was the phone in. I was with Lee Marshall. So I said, let's tune in. And we'd just beaten Brent. I think it was 5-1 or 5-0. I was like, it'd be good just to hear what the tone is. And I'm expecting it to be very upbeat. And the first curler on is saying, that Dan Byrne, he can't play left back. Eddie doesn't know what he's doing. I was like, whoa. Football fans, they're the same everywhere. But no, I mean, the support's just been incredible. And I mean, we'll chat a little bit of, you know, as we're building this club, I think back to the Wembley, and I spoke about, you know, how we took over the city, but that moment when we were 2-0 down in the 90th minute, and you can have a shot of the stadium, and half of it's just in black and white, you know, the other half aren't really bothered. I mean, it was just, when we're trying to sell what it is that's Newcastle United to our corporate partners, that feeling that makes it special, why this club is the most unique club in the world, it's moments like that that are just immeasurable for us. I think that sort of just encapsulate what is magic about this club, what's so special, and what makes our job so exciting, that we've got this opportunity to hopefully take this club where we all want to go.
Brilliant, Peter.
Yeah, and agree with a lot of what Darren said, but some of the comments that were made by the esteemed panelists here earlier, not really resonated. Bringing the pride back to the city, obviously, I haven't lived in the city. I've been here for a year, moving up here permanently in August. I love the city. It's incredible. But to think about having been a football fan all my life and reading about Newcastle United and the Keegan era and the Mike Ashley era and the different ups and downs, but just knowing, having got to know and love the people of the city, knowing how proud you must be of this club now compared to, you know, what it's been in the past, and just the fact that we all together, not just Darren and I and the club, but together as a group can make this city and this region so proud is amazing. Another question that I love tonight is, what's better, bringing Europe and the world to Newcastle or bringing Newcastle to the world and Europe? I don't know. It's a great question because it resonates. What Newcastle United did, what the fans did in London was incredible. I've lived in London for 20 years. My wife has never been offered a seat on the tube before, and never. And she said, two Geordie lads, Rajis, they basically said, they said to me, do you want a seat on the tube? And I said, that's because they knew who you were. And she went, no, but I was wearing my scarf. obviously my role and the team that I work with is to sell Newcastle. Is to make sure that we can generate money that he can spend, and hopefully, as everyone said, as well as they have done so far. But to bottle what London was that weekend, I mean, there's no club that can do that. Cleaning up a Trafalgar Square, just the way we behaved, the fact that in the 90th minute we were still celebrating and appreciating. I hope we can all continue to do that. We all know football is an emotional roller coaster, and we criticise the bad, and we put the good on a pedestal. But let's just all remember that this feeling, because it's one of appreciation. And if we can continue to sell that globally, which is what we need to do, we need to make sure that the club is seen globally for what it is here, would be amazing. And then, just thinking as well about, just the revolution that's happened both on and off the pitch, the comment that you guys make, and it resonated with me, which is the club will be in a better place in a year's time. And that's absolutely true. We will definitely, no matter where we finish, first, second, third, or eighth, the club will be in a better place in a year's time. And I appreciate the trust that someone said that, but it is true. We will be. We're going to build a team. We're going to build sort of off the pitch that is capable of being resilient to whether we're fourth or eighth or first. You have to be. Because as my friend's 10-year-old son said to me yesterday, he said, oh, Chelsea are going to finish in the top five next season. No one can say that. You don't know. It's such a competitive league. But the club will definitely be in a better place in a year's time, that's for sure. So appreciate the trust that the panel said on that point.
The lads have very, very kindly offered to take a couple of questions. So I suppose I'll ask you both what we just asked the panellists there at the end. So Darren, to start with you, moment of the season.
Well, the guys covered a lot. I think for me, I'll pick the Fulham game. I think Fulham away, we had quite a few draws. So it was one of those moments where I think you get them in seasons where the momentum could have gone either way. And so I think there was a bit of nervousness. Certainly I was feeling it going to Craven Cottage. So to win that game, the way that Miggy just pulled that one from nowhere. I mean, I think that was when I felt after that game, we went into that run of matches where we were scoring goals for fun. I think that was the moment where we kick-started the season. So many great moments. But for me, when I look back, and that was a key moment.
Can I go for four?
Of course you can. Good.
So there's Man City at home. I was about to take off on a plane to the US. I was just finalising discussion of the Darren to come, and my kids were wondering why Nicola and I were watching on a screen in the airport the City game. And then they wondered why we swore profusely on a beach in the US when Liverpool equalised in the 98th minute. Literally, it was like, what the fuck? And then sort of almost a bit personal, but also just sort of when we realised where we were going, the away draw at Arsenal. So obviously people will know I used to work at Arsenal for a long time. And I spent a lot of time on buses back from away games with David O'Leary and Pat Rice, who were very close to me. And after the game, I went into them and said, oh, sorry for the shithousery. And Pat Rice, like he was Arsene's like bulldog, and he said to me, I said, you know, obviously the fans are a bit upset that we've sort of shithoused the way to the first point that any club had taken at the Emirates that season. And David O'Leary and Pat Rice just turned to me, we thought you were fucking brilliant today. which we were. We were the first team to take a point from Arsenal at Emirates that season. And then everyone said it, but I think it's got to be both because it was so embarrassing but so exhilarating, was halftime at Spurs. We'd agreed that we decided to invite sort of Daniel and Todd from Spurs. We'd mixed the tables, which is unusual in the chairman's suite. So I was sitting at a table with Todd and Daniel, who I've got a good relationship with. But at halftime, it was just embarrassing to go in there for both of us. I'm not reveling in there, but it was just, I've never watched a game of football where I think someone said it was like more laughing than anything. Was this actually happening? I've been involved in a lot of friendly matches in my time, and I don't think I've ever seen goals go in like that. So, the first 22 minutes of Spurs was fantastic.
Brill, I'll ask you one final question then. Same question to you both. Darren first, Champions League football, how does it feel?
It's pretty remarkable. I think if you'd have said at the start of the season that we'd have this spot, I think we were just looking for progression. I think it's amazing for the city. I think it's amazing for the club. I mean, I want to do a huge shout out to Eddie Howe and the players, because I think it is just remarkable what he's done with the team. And I think it's really interesting when you look at the journey we're going on. I mentioned something to George at the Athletic early on when I joined. It was a bit of a glib comment. I said I was coming to a 130-year-old startup because I built a club from scratch in Atlanta, coming here to Newcastle with the sort of the resources that we put behind the team for 15 years. But I think I totally, and I admit it, hand on heart, I totally underestimated what was already here. So we've had the most unbelievable employee base that had actually done like what their core values are, what it means to be Newcastle United before the takeover. And it's four words and an overarching theme, but hard work, discipline, passion, collaboration, and then family is the overall theme. And that's exactly the same as what Eddie's doing, building his team. So we've already got a club with a bedrock who knows exactly what it is to be Newcastle United. And you see Eddie do it. Eddie's doing it with players that were already there. He's galvanizing the squad and bringing them together. And it brings me on to, look, we've got to savor this moment that we've got the Champions League. That doesn't mean that we want to rest on our laurels. We're going to build for next year. But I think it's really important, as we're building that team, that we do bring in the right characters, the right people that fit there. Because we've all seen it with other football clubs where it's not just about the money you spend, it's about how you spend it. And the weekend's game is a perfect illustration of that. So I think you're in safe hands with Eddie and Dan in terms of knowing what it is we're looking for. And the reality is, we're always going to spend what we can under FFP. And that's the great thing. And I can say that to you hand on heart here. It will always be, the club will be doing its best to get to where we want to get to. But we've got to make sure we do it methodically in the right way that's sustainable. But I'm telling you, with Eddie Howe, it is unbelievable to see just what he does with the squad, the way he's galvanized them. And I think that's what it's really important that we keep building with that in mind. But we've got a great pair of hands there with Eddie, because he's just unbelievably good.
So I think that was my annual review, just given in front of 250 people. Because I think Darren's basically just saying, you better make the money, or else these guys are all going to be upset. No, Champions League is obviously incredible. Putting this club back on the stage it deserves to be on. And the comment of earlier, is it Newcastle coming to Europe or Europe coming to Newcastle, which will be amazing. But for me, for us, it's a realization, and I think I said it to one of the players after the Carabao Cup final, it's really difficult to keep up as a club, as any business, to keep up with one side of the business just going so fast, so hard, so high, so quickly. We've got a lot of, back to the point, we will be in a better place next year as a club, no matter what, but that takes time. And actually trying to catch up, we've got to make sure we get the pricing right for Champions League and make sure that all the fans can enjoy themselves in Europe, and how do we bring people with us, and how do we bring sponsors on board to make sure we can to fuel it all? How do we bring, you know, the team here we've got commercially is tiny. People have been doing 5 or 6 different roles. You need to make sure that's built out, that's sustainable, both on people's workload and also for the future. So we've got a lot of catching up to do to make sure we're equipped for the Champions League off the pitch as well. But, you know, as I said to the guys in the room before, it's definitely a lot nicer picking up the phone, having people ask you, well, what's available? How can we, you know, how can we engage with this great football club? So a lot of work to do. Champions League is so exciting, but we've just got to keep up with it. That's a great problem to have. I think Darren calls it champagne problem.
Brilliant. Well, once again, I'd like to say thank you to you both for coming here and speaking to everyone. It's an immense privilege to host you, and it, you know, fan engagement, fan relationship with the club. This is it. This is what I think everyone in this room has always wanted. Not only are you guys visible and present at games, we now know who's in charge, who makes the decisions, who's driving the club forward. I'm just a massive privilege to host you both, and thanks so much for coming.
Cheers, guys. Thanks, everyone, guys. Thank you.
Okay, there's a 20-minute break now. We've gone massively over. Of course we have. So we'll see you again in 20 minutes for the Q&A. You make sure you get your questions down on paper. Charlotte will come and collect.